I've owned my company for 14 years now, and I can tell you that payroll is a four-letter word. I hate doing it. It eats up hours I don't have, and it costs me money I could be saving. But my accountant's too expensive, and I'm not sure who to call. But I know I need help.
We're Paychex, and we take all the hassles out of small business payroll. We save you time and money. It's easy. Call, fax, or give us your payroll information securely online, and we take care of the rest. We calculate the correct taxes, manage payments and direct deposits. We even send out your checks. Payroll doesn't need to be a four-letter word anymore. We're so sure that we can save you time and money that we'll give you a month's payroll free. Just for calling 877-726-3369. Get 1 month's payroll for free. Call Paychex right now. 877-726-3369. That's 877-726-3369.
From the campus of Yale University, this is Business Talk with Jim Campbell, nationally syndicated across the country on the Biz Talk Radio Network and coming to you from our flagship stations, Yale Radio WYBC and 1490 AM WGCH Greenwich. All talk and all business, 60 minutes of radio with leading figures from the world of business along with the business of politics and sports. Bernie Madoff's bank, what did they know and when did they know it? Was J.P. Morgan really J.P. Madoff today on Business Talk with Jim Campbell? Helen Chapman is a lawyer representing 1,600 Madoff victims, and her book is J.P. Madoff, The Unholy Alliance Between America's Biggest Bank and America's Biggest Crook. This is the Truth to Power book, very detailed, and she's a champion of the truth. Hello, Helen. Welcome.
Thank you so much.
We're going to get into a lot of detail, so I just want you to answer the first one in a couple of sentences from the famous Watergate. What did J.P. Morgan know, and when did they do it? At the very, very top level, how would you answer that?
I would say that they knew from inception that Madoff was committing crimes, and because it was such an enormously profitable account for them, they looked the other way and, in fact, accommodated a massive scheme that injured, of course, 35,000 people.
Okay, very good answer. Before we dive in again now, tell us a little bit where you're coming from, your perspective. You obviously represent the victims. Tell us exactly what you do.
I am a litigator. I'm a trial lawyer, and my specialty for decades has been litigation involving financial institutions, and in fact, I wrote a treatise on lender liability after coining the phrase. It's called The Law of Lender Liability, and it was published in 1990, and I then was brilliant enough to have put my liquid assets in Madoff. And so I lost those, and I was contacted by Bernie Madoff, and one of the first things he said to me was that Chase knew all along what I was doing. And when he first said it to me, I thought it was nonsense, and then, of course, I thought about it, and I realized his bank had a glass-bottom boat view of what he was doing. They saw every check that went into the account, and they saw every check or wire transfer that went out of the account. And the bank had an obligation under the Bank Secrecy Act to know its customer, to understand what Madoff's business was, what his cash flow was, so that they could detect any unusual activity, and if it appeared criminal, to report it to the federal government.
Let me ask you, because it's interesting, I didn't realize you'd actually lost money with him. How did you get introduced to him? Did you go in directly or through a feeder fund?
I went in directly, and I come from a family of lawyers, but we have one business person in the family, and he was extraordinarily successful, and he's quite brilliant. And after he sold his business for a huge amount of money, he sat down with me and said, "You should put all your money in Madoff. It's the best investment I ever made." And since he was the family expert on business, I took his advice, which, of course, he gave me out of love. And that's how I became a Madoff investor.
Did you understand what he was doing in terms of the SSC strategy, the split strike and all that?
I did. And as explained to me by my cousin Jack, it seemed to make sense. It seemed to be a hedged portfolio.
Mm-hmm.
I invested in 2005, and I was, when with Madoff, I was earning about 9%, mm-hmm. which was taxed at short-term capital gains rate. So it certainly wasn't
Yeah, it didn't seem like it was exorbitant. Yeah.
No, it certainly wasn't too good to be true. It seemed like a reasonable return. This was a period when people were investing in hedge funds and earning 30% a year.
Right.
And I thought I was investing in a very conservative investment. I had reviewed all of the history of the SEC, lauding Madoff. I knew he was the president of NASDAQ, and I made what I thought was a rational decision.
Yeah, so you did actually do some due diligence.
I did.
A lot of people just did this on trust. So how did you come together with the 1600, and what exactly you're doing, given that Picard is supposedly rounding up money for the net winners, if you will?
Sure. What happened was that my field of expertise, as I explained, was in litigation involving financial institutions. And, of course, as we all recall, when Lehman filed in bankruptcy in the fall of 2008, all litigation involving financial institutions ceased because no bank was willing to spend 5 cents to send a lawyer to court for anything. So, remarkably, my law practice, which had always been quite successful, came to a screeching halt. And then a month later, I realized that I'd lost my liquid investments.
Wow.
So I didn't have anything to do, and I decided, well, since I have no gainful employment, I might as well help Madoff victims. And I let it be known that I was willing to help people. I mean, I wasn't charging them. I was just doing it out of the goodness of my heart.
Mm-hmm.
People would call me from California and say, what do I do? I have a 99-year-old mother who's in a nursing home, and I don't have the money to pay for her service, and what do I do? So I was just operating this hotline and helping people, and it became known very quickly that anyone who wanted to could call me. And then by January, Madoff confessed on December 11th, by January, I began to focus on what really was needed to help the victims. And I, along with a number of other people, recognized that the Internal Revenue Service's theft loss provisions were not clear. It wasn't clear whether a Madoff victim would be entitled to a refund of taxes paid
mm-hmm.
on the theft loss. So I, again, with a number of other people, contacted Senator Schumer's office and Senator Menendez's office. And by March of 2009, there were hearings in the Senate Banking Committee with Senator Schumer and Menendez, and the Internal Revenue Service announced Revenue Procedure Ruling 2009-20, which provided that within 45 days of filing a theft loss return, the IRS would send the taxpayer a refund of the taxes paid on the last 5 years of profits from Madoff.
Interesting.
So that was really a wonderful thing because it allowed people to get money. Unfortunately, for a lot of Madoff investors, they were third-generation investors. They had come to think of Madoff as good as Treasury notes,
mm-hmm.
probably better. And so they put all their money in Madoff. They didn't diversify because they thought that Madoff was diversifying, just like you might have all your money at Fidelity or Vanguard, and you have it in diverse investments, and you think you're diversified. So when the Madoff money stopped coming in, these people had nothing. And so getting these tax refunds was a huge help for people. And then that evolved into beginning to see how Irving Picard was going to be behaving as trustee
mm-hmm.
in this SIPA liquidation. And then I gradually began to represent some of the victims. And I, having never lobbied in Congress, I began to lobby on a pro bono basis. And I was uniquely unsuccessful. But, of course, I didn't have any money to hand out to anybody. And there might be some relationship between those two facts. But in any event, I tried very hard to have amendments enacted to the Securities Investor Protection Act because, in my view, Picard and SIPC have unilaterally just abrogated the statute.
Mm-hmm. So you're ending up suing whom now?
Well, at this point, I'm defending approximately 100 clawback actions where Irving Picard is suing.
Oh, I got it.
Innocent people who took out more money than they put in over a lifetime.
Yeah, that is a ridiculous, seemingly ridiculous thing. And you, who do you have to go up against? You have to go up against Picard, or you?
I spend a lot of time up against Picard and against his law firm. And I've also, I've done everything I possibly could to help the victims. I filed a Federal Tort Claims Act seeking to hold the SEC liable. That was thrown out because you can't hold the government liable for anything. And I have filed an action against J.P. Morgan Chase, which was dismissed by the Middle District of Florida on the theory that the allegations, which were taken directly from the stipulation of facts that the government entered into with J.P. Morgan Chase to settle the criminal complaint that was filed against J.P. Morgan Chase arising out of its handling of the Madoff relationship, despite the fact that those facts were stipulated to by J.P. Morgan Chase, the federal district court judge dismissed the complaint because he found them implausible.
Wow. So where are you now? Are you stuck?
No, I'm still moving. I've appealed to the 11th Circuit the decision of the Middle District of Florida, and I've also tried to sue Jeffrey Pickhower's entities and his estate, and I've been singularly unsuccessful there, but it's not over. So I'm still doing everything I can to try to protect the victims.
Very nice. Well, we're going to talk about Picard, too. And we're going to get into more detail. We're almost running out of time in this segment. So what we'll do is we will get inside J.P. Morgan's culpability and the willful blindness that Helen has uncovered. You're listening to Business Talk with Jim Campbell over the Business Talk Radio Network, 350 stations around the country. You can go to biztalkradio.com to find the station closest to you or to listen over the internet or to access our podcast. We'll be right back. More Blindness by J.P. Morgan.
Hi, I'm Joan London. If you're worried about your parent or loved one living alone, like I was, and you want reliable senior care information, then call A Place for Mom, the nation's largest senior living referral service.
Finding an apartment that was on the courtyard with the view of the trees, the view of the ducks, the stream, the creek, all of that, that was what I needed.
You'll get free information on assisted living, Alzheimer's care, nursing homes, even important financial information. Here's the number.
To speak with a local senior living advisor, call A Place for Mom at 800-451-2976. That's 800-451-2976.
A Place for Mom is a free service, and you can trust them to help you. So if you're struggling to find reliable senior living information, there's a place for answers, A Place for Mom.
To speak with a local senior living advisor, call A Place for Mom at 800-451-2976. That's 800-451-2976.
All right, guys. We're ready for our four-season sunroom, and Daddy's going to get a rec room with refreshments.
Oh, no. We'll be sleeping under the stars.
Mom, what about the one with, you know, the fun?
Nice try, little bro. It's a gym. My gym.
Hey, Grandma's getting her Four Seasons garden room. Weather tight and still like being outdoors.
Maybe a living room. Oh, no, wait. A family hub.
Yeah!
No matter what the budget, the season, or the climate, Four Seasons sunrooms let you and your family enjoy the outdoors inside. Call now to hear more about these great offers from the premier manufacturer of sunrooms since 1975.
Seasons now.
To find out more, call toll-free 800-933-5775. That's 800-933-5775.
This alert just came in. This special announcement is for business owners and leaders of organizations who've been waiting for the right time to build. General Steel has made it impossible to wait any longer with rock-bottom prices that could save you thousands. That's right, General Steel, America's leader in pre-engineered structures, is offering buildings at prices you will never see again. Don't miss these prices. A 50 by 100 for under $30,000. You heard right. That's 5,000 square feet under $30,000. Manufacturers, if you need a larger building, try a 100 by 100 commercial building for $129,000. You can't afford to rent with these prices. Imagine a 70 by 100 foot church building for under $69,000. With the economy improving and interest rates still at historic lows, you can't afford to wait.
Call 800-605-5370, 800-605-5370. Call 800-605-5370.
Today, more than ever, Americans need a means to protect their life savings. With a troubled economy and government spending out of control, they've been forced to promote loose money policies, which decreases the value of the dollar and promotes inflation. Birch Gold Group can help you protect your savings by rolling over all or a portion of your IRA or 401k into an IRA backed by physical gold. Take advantage of the best gold prices in years and enjoy the long-term hedge against inflation that gold provides by moving into a gold IRA from Birch Gold Group, the precious metal IRA specialists. Call Birch Gold Group today for a free consultation on how a tax-free rollover to a gold IRA can offer stability, protection, and the peace of mind that your life savings, which you've worked so hard to build, is safe. Call 888-999-1351 and receive Birch Gold's free information kit, which offers the best-kept secrets for safeguarding your savings with gold. Call 888-999-1351. That's 888-999-1351.
BizTalkRadio.com.
And we're back with Helen Chapman. She's a Madoff victims attorney, as she was telling us in the first segment. And we're going to dive into J.P. Morgan now. They have this thing, it's called the 703 account, which ostensibly was to run Madoff's expenses through for the investment advisory side of the business. But as you lay out in your book, like $150 billion of money went in and out of this. You said, every check could be identified. There were thousands more customers than they should have been. Tell us about the 703 account and what J.P. Morgan should have known or should have done.
It's an important element of Madoff's crime to realize that he didn't do this alone. And in fact, he wasn't the largest beneficiary of the fraud at all. One of the primary beneficiaries was a man named Norman Levy.
Mm-hmm.
And Madoff and Levy were close friends. They had had an account at Bankers Trust where they were kiting checks. And Bankers Trust called them in the early 1990s and said, can you explain to us what these transactions are? We don't understand them. Madoff and Levy were unable to explain them, and Bankers Trust said, well, we're closing your account, and we're reporting this to the government.
Explain to people quickly what kiting is.
Well, kiting is where you have two different bank accounts. Let's say that you and I each have a bank account. I give you a check for $500,000. You deposit it into your account, and your bank gives you immediate access to that money. And then a few days later, you give me a check for $500,000, and I put that in my account, and my bank also gives me access to the money before the funds clear. So basically what's happening is that a bank is giving you access to funds a few days before the funds actually clear, and there isn't really money to back it up unless you shift this money back and forth.
And you're making interest potentially on what's
exactly
what's essentially float in float money.
Exactly.
Let me ask, why? So was Norm Levy doing this to get float interest? Why was he doing this, and what was Madoff's reason for doing it? Letting his account essentially be used to launder all this money in and out every day.
Let me just step back and say this.
Okay.
The check hiding went on from 1992 to 2002 at J.P. Morgan Chase. And during that period of time, the amount that was kited was $106 billion.
Wow.
With a B. Just in 2001, $35 billion was written in checks from Levy to Madoff and back to Levy. And the checks would be things like this. $973,462.14. That would be the check from Levy to Madoff. The next day, Madoff would write a check to Levy in exactly the same amount. And the next day, Levy would write a check to Madoff in exactly the same amount. Nobody was trying to fool anybody here. And they didn't need to try to fool anybody because they had J.P. Morgan Chase on their side. And we know that J.P. Morgan Chase noticed this, which, of course, they had a legal obligation to do, because they wrote an internal memo in 1994 saying there can't be anything legal about what's going on here. But as you pointed out, what they were concerned about was not having to pay interest on the deposits. So they brought Levy and Madoff in, and they said, you know, we think that we shouldn't have to pay interest on your deposits. And so they worked out a deal where they didn't have to pay the interest, but they allowed the kiting to continue.
Helen, so what? Why exactly? What's Libby getting out of this, and what's Madoff getting out of this?
I have never gotten an answer from Madoff about this. I believe, and I don't know this, this is only my speculation, I believe that what was going on was, you know, Madoff had a huge trading business.
Yes.
Beyond the investment advisor business. I mean,
yes.
He had 200 employees, 188
yeah,
of them.
That was the legitimate side.
Were involved in legitimate
yeah.
trading. And he was, in fact, the largest single trader in securities. He did trades equal at times to 10% of the daily volume on the New York Stock Exchange. It was massive. And as I understand it, and this is not my area of expertise, but I've been told that when a broker holds a position for more than 24 hours, he has to put up money, 40% of the purchase price, to secure it.
For net capital requirements, yeah.
Exactly. I believe that Levy was providing that capital. And Madoff was not bankable because he'd been kicked out of Bankers Trust. He paid whatever he had to get the relationship he had with J.P. Morgan Chase. They were not going to lend him the money to do this. And so he had to find some other way to finance it. I believe that's what happened.
Interesting. Now, on Levy's side, he would be doing this for the interest.
Levy and Madoff were very close friends. Levy ended up a multi-billionaire. So as this money went back and forth, Levy got money. He got stolen money from Madoff's customers.
Okay, so it went back and forth. Okay, so you think Levy's benefit was that money was going back and forth, but it was increasing over time in his account that what was sticking there.
No question about it, because J.P. Morgan Chase was writing internal memos about how much money Levy was making off the Madoff account. He had Madoff accounts separate from this check-hiding scheme. J.P. Morgan Chase couldn't understand how Levy could have become such a rich man. He became a multi-billionaire in less than a decade.
On the other side of the ocean, the British, in what they call the equity exotics decks, they were actually structuring securities that looked like Madoff so that they would have a hedge against money they had invested with Madoff, right?
Yes.
They had questions about this, but there's a silo between them and the U.S., or why did it happen that the U.S. side didn't seem to know what the U.K. side knew?
Well, that's interesting, because in October of 2008, when, of course, everything was collapsing anyway, the London branch of J.P. Morgan Chase sent a suspicious activity report to the UK government saying that we believe that Madoff is operating a Ponzi scheme. And that a copy of that communication was obviously sent to the general counsel, Steve Cutler, in New York. J.P. Morgan Chase in New York kept Madoff's account open until after December 11, 2008. And one would certainly wonder why. But in terms of filing a suspicious activity report, they should have filed one when the account was open and they first saw the check hiding.
One of the worst aspects of this to me is that the bank in England focused on getting their money out of the feeder funds, monies that J.P. Morgan had put in there, but did not warn its own clients who were in there.
Well, J.P. Morgan Chase in New York did that. That's why they didn't close the account, because they were so busy trying to get their own money out. And, in fact, when Madoff confessed, there were internal communications where they're congratulating each other.
Norm Levy, in fact, I have the number here now that you were saying. He started with $183 million and ended up with like $1.7 billion with Madoff. So, yeah, he did make, that's 830% over 12 years, not bad. Let me ask you about Carl Shapiro, who's another one of the guys that benefited. When the thing went belly up on December 11th, when Madoff confessed, he had a $2 billion margin loan in that account. How did they get released from them? I mean, that's money that he theoretically owed Madoff or Madoff's victims, actually, right?
Yes. And Irving Picard mysteriously has made sweetheart deals with all of the co-conspirators. And one of them is Carl Shapiro, who didn't have to pay back the margin loan. And I don't recall exactly what his settlement was, but it was insignificant in the context of what Shapiro had known. There are memos where Shapiro was writing saying, I want this account to earn 40% in the next month or whatever. You know, there were certain customers like Picower and Shapiro who would tell Madoff what kind of returns they wanted. And, of course, the only way that Madoff could comply with those demands was by stealing the money from innocent people.
And that's where we'll stop for right now, because we're going to talk about Picower when we get back. More Bad Behavior by J.P. Morgan Chase coming up.
What is term life insurance? It's basically a financial protection plan for your family if you pass away. It can be a hard purchase. Think about it. It's one of the few major purchases you can make that you will personally never use. But you've got to have it to protect your family. And you owe it to yourself to shop and compare to get the best possible rates. For term life insurance policies of $500,000 or more, call the Term Lifeline today.
800-957-6068. That's 800-957-6068. Remember, we specialize in term life insurance policies of $500,000 or more. And we have great rates for smokers, too. So call today. 800-957-6068. 800-957-6068. That's 800-957-6068.
Do you owe $10,000 or more on at least two federal student loans? Then you may qualify for new programs offered by the Department of Education. These programs can reduce your interest, lower your payments, and possibly qualify you for loan forgiveness. If you have $10,000 or more and at least two federal student loans and currently not in school, you may qualify for one of these programs. Call now to check your eligibility. Student loan advisors are standing by to help you determine if you qualify for these new programs. They can help you reduce your interest, lower your payment, and even forgive a portion of your student loan debt. Take control of your financial future. Make this free 5-minute free call now to Nationwide Student Loans and learn how you can reduce your student loan debt.
800-439-1588. 800-439-1588. 800-439-1588. 800-439-1588.
Due to an upturn in the economy, Main Street Business Loans has pre-approved the release of millions of dollars in small business funding. Your business may already be pre-approved to receive up to $250,000. We've sent out millions of pre-approval letters. We see the economy growing, and our underwriters believe now is the time to invest in your business so you can grow faster and make more money. And we're prepared to give you up to $250,000 to do it. Your funds can be available in 5 days. There are no application fees, no annual fees, just quick access to up to $250,000. If your business did not receive your approval letter to get up to $250,000, call Main Street Business Loans Approval Desk now.
800-430-7570. 800-430-7570. 800-430-7570. That's 800-430-7570.
This is a national health care alert from the Health Hotline. If you, a family member, or a loved one suffers from knee pain and have Medicare as your primary insurance, we've got great news. You could qualify for a pain-relieving knee brace at little or no cost to you. Get free delivery, and all the paperwork is handled by our accredited suppliers at no charge to you. So if you're on Medicare and have knee pain, don't wait. You may qualify to immediately receive a pain-relieving knee brace at little or no cost. Friendly agents are standing by 24/7 to help you. We also have other pain-relieving braces too for your shoulder, ankle, or back. You may be eligible to get these items and more at little or no out-of-pocket cost. Our friendly representatives are standing by now to help you, so please call now.
Call 855-227-0301. That's 855-227-0301. Again, 855-227-0301. That's 855-227-0301.
Are you worried about losing your home to foreclosure? If you've been threatened with foreclosure or receive legal papers from your bank, you have approximately 30 days to respond. If you do not respond, you could lose your home. You have rights. Act now to protect your rights. You can stay in your home. Many times you can even modify your loan. The bottom line is you can get past this, but you must act right now. If you've been served by your bank and you're worried about losing your home to foreclosure, now is the time to fight back and save your home. Time is limited, so call the professionals at National Foreclosure Defense right now.
800-708-7922. 800-708-7922. 800-708-7922. 800-708-7922. That number again is 800-708-7922.
BizTalkRadio.com.
We're back with Helen Chapman. She's the author of J.P. Madoff, The Unholy Alliance Between America's Biggest Bank and America's Biggest Crook. And a third member of what you were calling a conspiracy with Madoff, even though the general assumption is he acted pretty much alone. This guy, to me, I almost call him an unknown bad guy. Jeff Pickhower made basically $7 billion off of Madoff, off of the victims. There were the net loss for the total, all those 5,000 or whatever the number is, was $17 billion. So they recovered. He turned back $7 billion back, right? And does that and he had a $6 billion margin loan. So essentially, I don't even know how you look at that. So out of his $7 billion that he put in his pocket, he was getting away with $6 billion he owed back. Not to mention that, as you said, it would have been $21 billion with interest over the time. Take us through Pickhower.
Sure. Jeffrey Pickhower was a very close personal friend of Madoff's and was the mastermind, in my opinion, behind the whole scheme.
Interesting.
And that's, Madoff says this very emphatically. And the over, according, what I know about Pickhower is largely from the complaint that the trustee filed against Pickhower, in which the trustee alleged that over a period of 25 years, Pickhower invested $650 million and took out $7.8 billion with a B.
Pretty good deal.
So he netted $7.2 billion. Now, if you took $7.2 billion and invested it in Treasury notes over 25 years, it would have tripled in value. So I think we can fairly assume that if Pickhower had no source of income other than his Madoff accounts, he would have been worth about $30 billion. Now, if you just interestingly compare that with Madoff's net worth, Irving Picard liquidated all of Madoff's assets, and I think he raised $125 million. So the real mystery in this whole case is, what was the deal between Jeffrey Pickhower and Madoff? Why did the government let the Pickhower entities off with such a light penalty? Because, of course, Pickhower committed tax fraud through this whole process, according to the trustee's complaint against Pickhower. Pickhower's chief financial officer, April Froelich, would tell Madoff, we need you to restate the last 6 months' statements on this particular account because we need a $150 million loss. And, of course, Madoff would do that, and obviously those...
Mind-boggling. Let me say, you were saying let off and on the $6 billion margin, et cetera, but Pickhower's estate gave $7 billion back of that stolen money. Is that, that's right, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
Okay. That looks like a light tap on the wrist, but it's kind of hard for people to understand that.
I agree with you. When Pickhower announced it, nobody could say, well, $7.2 billion isn't a lot of money,
except
that means that Pickhower got an interest-free loan.
Yeah.
Of $7.2 billion over 25 years.
Plus the $6 billion that he was forgiven for the margin loan. How do you come down on the $17 billion is the actual principal loss, but it was 64.8 with what people thought they had on their balance, on their statements. How do you view the loss?
Well, let me say this. Let's assume that you have listeners who bought their houses in Greenwich in 1964. And let's assume they paid $100,000, and now the house is worth $10
million. Yeah.
How would they feel if I came to them and said, you know, the mayor of Greenwich has been dishonest, and he's been operating some kind of scheme here, And therefore, when you sell your house, you're just going to get the money you put into it, and you're not going to get the appreciation.
You know, that's the same argument I've had with Madoff myself, which is, you know, he focuses on the $17 billion and trying to get that back. But as I say, I bought a Berkshire Hathaway share for $15,000, and you know what it's at now, the A share. They're over a couple hundred thousand. And if someone came to me and said that, you know, Buffett had run a Ponzi scheme and I was getting my $15,000 back and I should be happy, I wouldn't be very happy.
No, and I think that the public, it's very interesting. It's the same pattern that you see with people's attitude towards rape victims. You know, she was wearing too short a skirt or she was too attractive, whatever. The same thing that people do with Madoff investors. In order to distance themselves from the anguish, they blame the victim. And there are very few people among the public who recognize what an absolute outrage the treatment of Madoff investors has been. But if you personalize it and you turned it around to them, they would be horrified.
They'd understand it. Let me ask you, you just said Madoff maintains Picower was the guy. Do you buy that Picower is the bad guy in this scenario, in this whole thing, or is it Madoff?
It's Madoff who operated the fraudulent scheme, but it's Picower who was the largest beneficiary of it by far. I mean, there's no comparison.
Let me ask it this way. If Picower didn't exist, would this thing still have happened?
I think that Madoff would have been a petty criminal. I think that Picower had the intelligence and the training. I think he was both a lawyer and an accountant, and I think that he probably trained Madoff and taught him how to do this.
And that Madoff really inherently isn't the degree of crook that he seemed to be.
I don't think that Madoff has had the capacity to be a big-time crook. I think he looked to Picower to help him do that.
Yeah, that's kind of what I feel. I just want to see what your feeling was on that. All right, now let's look at the rest of J.P. Morgan now, because there's just an incredible amount of other bad behavior, and there's also regulatory capture. Everybody was asleep on this. J.P. Morgan has been the subject of $30.6 billion in fines, and the Madoff was 1.7. First off, do you believe that a deferred prosecution was fair, and can you prosecute a bank?
You prosecute Jamie Dimon. I mean, I think that Jamie Dimon should be indicted under RICO because he's operating a criminal scheme, and it's a criminal enterprise. You can't have the largest financial institution in the United States paying fines over the last 5 years of $36 billion pleading guilty to three felonies just in the last 3 years. And they do this with absolute impunity.
You know what's amazing, too, is they never lost any money. So that $34.6 billion, they still had profit.
It's a small percentage of the profits they paid. If they fix the foreign exchange rate, their profits could be in the billions.
So you think that that you should hold the CEO criminally liable?
You know, we did that with organized crime. One of the chapters of my book, I compare the Gambino crime family to J.P. Morgan Chase. And at the end of the chapter, I have a little chart which lists the various characteristics of the Gambino crime family, and then I check whether they exist as well with J.P. Morgan Chase. And ironically, the only differences are the dress code and the requirements for getting haircuts, because people may remember that Carlo Gambino came into power when the previous head of the Gambino crime family had an unfortunate haircut at one of the hotels in New York and was killed in the barbershop.
Now, this $34.6 billion, the Madoff is actually only $1.7 billion of that. Is that correct?
Yes. Let's see. I think it's $2.7
billion. Okay, yeah, so it's almost $3 billion. So that means that the mortgage fraud that arose out of 2008, that's the biggest single component. I think it's like $18
billion? The settlement with the government was $13 billion, of which $4 billion was consumer relief that Chase was supposed to give to consumers, which, of course, they didn't do. It runs the gamut. I mean, actually, one of my favorite settlements that J.P. Morgan Chase entered into was they paid $389 million, which seems like a small amount of money when you look at these different settlements. But they paid because they had set up a system for their customers where they were going to sell credit monitoring services to them.
Mm-hmm.
And they had developed only half of the business plan. Half of the business plan was to charge the customers, and the other half was to provide a service. They charged the customers, but they forgot to figure out how they would provide the service. and they were uncovered for this. Well, how does this happen? This only happens in an institution where the standard is do whatever you have to do to bring in profits and don't worry about the legalities.
The mortgage fraud, let me ask this question, too, because this is one that I'm wondering about, is that they bought Washington Mutual, WAMU, right? And they had Bear Stearns that was packaging mortgages as well. Was a lot of the fraud in those two businesses they picked up as opposed to J.P. Morgan's integrity?
No, there was a lot in there was a lot in Chase. Chase had a huge residential mortgage business. And the fraud continues to this day. There's no change in the culture because the fraud is so profitable for J.P. Morgan Chase that they have no reason to change. Nobody goes to jail. You know, the irony of it is that the whole concept of punishment in the criminal justice system is that it's supposed to be a deterrent. And for certain kinds of crimes, it's not a deterrent. But for white-collar crimes, it would be, because one thing that the people on Wall Street haven't figured out yet is how to pay someone else to serve their prison terms. So if you indicted Jamie Dimon under a RICO, and I have a chapter in the book where I lay out how you could do that, and I lay out all the evidence to support it, that would begin a sea change in culture on Wall Street.
Our last national segment is coming up next. We'll look at a whale of a loss and some reform ideas.
Starting a business can be tough, but getting the word out about your business through a great website can be even tougher. That's why you need spotonwebsite.com. At spotonwebsite.com, you can register your company's domain name and even build your website overnight. It's fast, easy, and most of all, it's sure to fit your budget. Spotonwebsite.com has a wide range of internet products and solutions to make the most of your website, even on a small business budget. Log on today and see for yourself at spotonwebsite.com.
Hi, I'm Joan London. If you're worried about your parent or loved one living alone, like I was, and you want reliable senior care information, then call A Place for Mom, the nation's largest senior living referral service.
Finding an apartment that was on the courtyard with the view of the trees, the view of the ducks, the stream, the creek, all of that was what I needed.
You'll get free information on assisted living, Alzheimer's care, nursing homes, even important financial information. Here's the number.
To speak with a local senior living advisor, call A Place for Mom at 800-451-2976. That's 800-451-2976.
A Place for Mom is a free service, and you can trust them to help you. So if you're struggling to find reliable senior living information, there's a place for answers, A Place for Mom.
To speak with a local senior living advisor, call A Place for Mom at 800-451-2976. That's 800-451-2976.
Hi, I'm George Foreman. Do you have an idea for a new product or invention? People ask me all the time, George, how do I get my idea in front of companies? How do I get a patent? What do I do next? Do you have the same questions? I'll tell you like I'll tell them all. Call my friends at InventHelp.
Call InventHelp today for free information. InventHelp can submit your invention to companies who are interested in receiving new ideas.
To get your free inventor's information, call 1-800-352-3719. That's 1-800-352-3719.
Do you have an old car sitting in your driveway? How would you like to learn a hassle-free way to get rid of it, help kids in need, and get a great tax donation in the process? It's real easy. One simple free call to our car donation hotline is all it takes. Call the Neshama Foundation at 800-721-6723, 800-721-6723. We'll come pick your car up for free and give you a tax donation for the full value of the car, running or not. The value of your unwanted car will go to help kids in need. It's fast and easy. Just call us and your car will be gone and on its way to helping children in 48 hours. And you get a nice tax deduction. Call the Neshama Foundation now to get rid of your car, help kids, and get a tax write-off. Call 800-721-6723, 800-721-6723, 800-721-6723. That's 800-721-6723.
Are you ready to leave your corporate job behind and be your own boss? Have you ever dreamed of owning a business? Do you have $50,000 or more sitting around in a 401k?
If you answered yes, it's time to invest in yourself by buying or starting a business or franchise. IRS code allows you to use money in a 401k to invest in a business with absolutely no penalties or taxes. At Guidant Financial, we've helped more than 11,000 entrepreneurs invest $3 billion in retirement assets into the small businesses and franchises of their dreams. So if you've got $50,000 or more in a 401k and you're looking for a way to start a business, call Guidant Financial now for free information and to learn more. Operators are standing by for your call. 800-570-6630. 800-570-6630. 800-570-6630. That's 800-570-6630.
Has your life changed? Are you now in a situation where you need health insurance? Here's some simple advice. Call our health insurance hotline right now. This free service will do all the work for you. Shop the health insurance marketplace and find the plan that best meets your health insurance needs. Don't get lost searching for plans on your own. Let a licensed agent help you for free. According to a report on CNN Money, almost half of those eligible for subsidies are paying less than $3 a day for bronze or silver plans. Remember, under Obamacare, most Americans qualify for health insurance. So get ready to let us do all the work for you and find out the best health insurance plan for your needs. Call this number now.
800-659-7975. 800-659-7975. For your free health insurance quote, call now. 800-659-7975. 800-659-7975.
BizTalkRadio.com.
Our guest, Madoff victims lawyer Helen Chapman. I want to talk now about what Jamie Dimon originally referred to as a tempest in a teapot. That's the London Whale trading, which ended up being a $6 billion at best loss and just a ton of bad behavior in that. And in fact, the chief investment officer, I've heard rumors that the whale, Bruno Axel, actually may have reported directly to Jamie. Talk about the London Whale.
I have to commend Carl Levin, who no longer is in the Senate,
yes,
but who was head of the Subcommittee on Investigations, which did a remarkable study of the London Whale. They poured through thousands of emails and documents, and the report really formed the basis of my chapter on the London Whale. I think Carl Levin expressly found that Jamie Dimon and Steve Kuttler committed securities fraud, yet they weren't indicted for it. Steve Kuttler actually was not the one who made the fraudulent statements. He just bragged about the fact that he was so proud that Jamie Dimon said what he did, which was about a tenth of the truth. And it's really hard to understand how we can live in an era where the senior-most officer of the largest financial institution in the United States can openly commit securities fraud, as found by an esteemed senator in the United States Senate, and yet the Department of Justice doesn't feel that this man should be indicted for it. It sets such a terrible example for the country.
What about, too, the fact, Helen, that this was the chief investment officer was meant to hedge the risk in their loan portfolio, and it became $300 billion of assets in it, in what was essentially a hedge fund, almost hidden in J.P. Morgan, and that ended up, rather than hedging, actually going out and taking risk, exactly to the opposite of what would have been done to actually hedge the portfolio. That I don't know if that's fraudulent, but it's terrible business.
Well, it's more than that. It's criminal because, first of all, the American taxpayers insure J.P. Morgan Chase's deposits.
Right.
So let's just take one simple example. Jamie Dimon comes over to J.P. Morgan Chase in the summer of 2004. And during this period of time, Bernie Madoff is maintaining deposits in his 703 account of $3 to $6 billion with a B. Now, I don't know if you remember this, but I remember that sometimes if you, banks would advertise if you started an account with $5,000, you'd get a toaster. What do you get if you leave $3 to $6 billion in your account at J.P. Morgan Chase? I'm sure that that's what inspired Jamie Dimon to decide to set up the chief investment office and to start gambling with depositors' money. He hired very aggressive people. He brought over Ina Drew and instructed her to hire very aggressive people who were compensated based on their profits. They were investing depositors' money, and the American public was guaranteeing it.
Pretty ugly. In the overtime session, we're going to go and dive a little deeper in there and see the number of lies in almost every part of the London Whale. But I want to bring this thing full circle. Where do you come down on what satisfaction the Madoff victims should get?
The Madoff victim should have been entitled to $500,000 in civic insurance per account based on their last statement. That's what the statute says.
Yeah.
When the statute was enacted, all of the legislative history said the whole purpose here is if someone has the misfortune of dealing with a dishonest broker who steals the money or doesn't buy the securities, CIPIC will stand behind it. CIPIC is Wall Street. Of course, they didn't stand behind it, and very regrettably, the courts backed Picard on this, which is one of the saddest things that I've seen in my legal career.
The net winner. Should J.P. Morgan be broken up, either because of it can't be managed or because of this behavior?
Well, first of all, I would prosecute, if I were the Attorney General, I would prosecute 20 senior officers at J.P. Morgan Chase.
Okay.
And then I would break up the bank.
And then you break up the bank. Okay. Let's talk now, in the remaining 3 minutes, the reforms the ideas you have, and some of them are pretty profound. First, you'd repeal Glass-Steagall, right?
Yes, and a lot of people are saying that. It has to be done. It's outrageous that the public insures Jamie Dimon's criminal escapades.
What would you do to regulatory capture, or the fact that these guys go, like Cutler, right, went right from the SEC enforcement to becoming basically general counsel for J.P. Morgan?
The Obama administration has done such an enormous disservice to the country, because Eric Holder's view that you can't prosecute a bank is insane. It's not the bricks and mortar that commits all these crimes. It's the people who go to work every day. And as I said, if you prosecuted some of the senior people, it would have a ripple effect throughout Wall Street.
You'd have a special prosecutor type of person? Is that how you would do it?
Well, I think we have to take it out of politics, because at this point, we've created such monsters in the Wall Street firms. They have so much money to bribe everybody in Congress and everybody in Washington. We need to have people who adhere to the values which are so fundamental to this country. And I think you have to take it out of politics. There should be a prosecutor who's not tied, not appointed by the president, not tied to any party, and who's not corruptible.
This is an interesting one, too, rather than allow the auditors to get too much in bed with these companies, you would have them switched, and they would randomly be blindly selected.
Yes, because, for example, J.P. Morgan Chase's auditors had to have known that Jamie Dimon was taking depositors' money and speculating with it.
Mm-hmm.
And these people are all tied in. If you can corrupt Eric Holder, you certainly can corrupt an auditor.
What about the argument that, having the same auditor has a great institutional memory, and you understand, you know what's going on under the hood a lot better?
I understand that, but we don't have the luxury of affording that, because we have so much corruption in corporations. We don't have the luxury of affording that.
Now, you also call for the repealing of the Private Securities Litigation Reform Act. What does that mean?
Unfortunately, I mean, Bill Clinton did two things that were horrendous for this country. One was the repeal of Glass-Steagall, and the other was, I can't blame him for this because he opposed this, but it was enacted over his veto. The Private Securities Litigation Reform Act was the result of a movement to prevent people from suing large corporations. It's been very, very effective, as has the fact that the courts have become packed with people who are very sympathetic to large corporations and are not the least bit offended when large corporations commit crimes. We don't have private attorneys general anymore. We don't have that protection that we should have, where private citizens have the ability to go into court and prove dishonesty and corruption.
That's where we'll have to end it, on the national show. And you probably have heard about the most passionate crusader for justice in this whole Madoff and J.P. Morgan affair, and very few people understand the degree to which all of the layers of this. The book is J.P. Madoff, The Unholy Alliance Between America's Biggest Bank and America's Biggest Crook. As she told me before, there's 1,100 footnotes in there. This thing is documented to the hilt. This has been Business Talk with Jim Campbell. You can get podcasts at iTunes. Search Business Talk with Jim Campbell. Stay with us now. We're going to go into overtime with Helen. And our next show, the founder of the fashion famous UGG boots. Thanks to Helen Chaim. Thanks to our national audience for listening. We'll see you next Sunday on Business Talk with Jim Campbell.
The opinions you hear on Biz Talk Radio are those of the hosts, callers, and guests, and do not necessarily reflect those of this station, Biz Talk Radio, its management, or advertisers. The information on Biz Talk Radio does not constitute a recommendation, offer, or solicitation to buy or sell any product or securities. Please consult a professional before investing. If you have any questions about Biz Talk Radio, contact us at 817-274-1609 or at biztalkradio.com. BizTalkRadio.com.